Here, as we begin, Jimmy, you have a question. Okay, I will try.
The guy that knows stuff? Or no?
Yes. I will try.
But sometimes you hear the saying, God-fearing. And mm-hmm. I never understood that. I mean, if we love the Lord, why would he fear? Why would he fear the Lord?
Yeah. Mm, good question. Maybe we should get the group to answer it. Maybe what people assume they mean by that, but that's a good question. Why, when
respect.
Someone uses the phrase...
Yeah.
Okay, so Joyce thinks it's a respect thing, yeah?
It's a respect. You don't necessarily, you're not absolutely terrified of something, but yet you respect them because you love them.
So that could well be what...
Originally, you're meant to hold in awe.
Yeah, which is now it's just sort of far
changed.
So fearing, scared. Because we think of fearing as being afraid of.
Being afraid. Mm. Right,
right. No, yeah, but it's not.
We shouldn't be afraid of God.
We should not be afraid of God, no.
I think
we
respect him.
Yeah, I see it like...
respect who he is.
Okay. You've got fear in your life. Whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you like? I'm the scaredy cat, right? Self's not, but maybe it's because she has more fear of God than I have fear of everything. So maybe you're narrowing down your fear to one, and if you're gonna fear one, maybe God might be better than the rest of the stuff.
it's an interesting thought. Well, you know, go ahead.
Because I'm terrified by the world.
Like, yeah, sure.
Like the stuff that's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think it's fearing his authority, respecting his authority.
Yeah.
That's why I've always looked at that. Recognizing
yeah.
he is God.
So what's interesting is I think here's a great example of what we were talking about earlier. This is the breadth of why words are difficult to understand.
Yeah.
I say this word, and I think I had one years ago, and I do have it in my little... standard intro to everyone has a worldview. Everyone associates with certain words, and I think I had a whole bunch of like one of those word graphics up there with biblical words. When you say this, when you say that, when you say this, when you say that, what do you associate
what
with
you
that?
Yourself,
you know,
yeah.
because we all react to certain words and certain notions. So I would have just God fearing for me to be somebody who takes God as a serious reality in their life. But it absolutely could be somebody who's living in dread of, you know, the wrath of God or disappointing God. Or it just could be any number of things like that. But it's not, for me, always, it's just not clear what they mean. But so a God-fearing person just might be somebody who has a spiritual God frame that they're living out of.
So it doesn't actually mean that person...
But it might. I mean, it just depends on their... What do they mean by it? When someone says, I'm a God-fearing person, I would always say, well, what do you mean by that?
Mm.
This is a standard thing. Whenever you're having a conversation with somebody, you want to make it simple, just say, oh, could you tell me what you mean by that?
Mm.
Because when people use the word Christian today, like if you don't get that defined, I'm sorry, you could be talking about things in the opposite quadrants of the universe, let alone apples and oranges. So get people to define their terms. That's sort of what
evolving meaning of words in the English language. The English language keeps evolving, and words that meant one thing even 50 years ago mean something else now.
Correct.
There was a show I saw on Netflix recently. It's like the new Crocodile Hunter. It's only had one season because but they actually have a little pop-up that comes up as these guys are bantering back and forth in the bush. The guys from the North Territory, and they're out there. They got more slang. And if you don't know what they're talking about, you're completely lost. Or they'll use a word in a way that you're completely... That's what's actually happening in Scripture. If Jesus speaks Aramaic, that's not what we actually have it written in. So it's already going from Aramaic, what he spoke in, into Greek, which was the trade and the wider sort of popular language. So there are these realities that, you know, that we're kind of caught up in.
So very quick thing then.
Yeah.
Very, very quick. this is a very funny thing. I don't know what year was it, maybe the second time Nicole and I went to Kenya, years back, and we're at a supermarket in Nairobi, we're coming to Canada now, just shopping a little bit. And she was really, very excited about the soap that she wanted to buy. The soap, oh, but man, I didn't get that. Like, wow, it's just bar soap. Like, what was it? Well, the name is Lady Gay. Lady Gay, I just need it. Why is so excited by that? It's Lady Gay, this will be a bad thing in Canada. And I was like, okay. So she bought like six of them, and her principal lady was actually gay.
And oh, that's even funnier!
So for me, it was still just a soap. I grew up lady bar soap, the lady gay.
That's
and it's
perfect.
Just what it was. And I had no clue why my wife's so excited about this and has to bring it to Canada. And so now I know.
But it's so true. The power of words and what they mean in one culture or context, especially when there's translation involved or a lack of translation involved. Thank you so much, Chris. It is an intriguing and important thing. So that's why when people are you saved? Well, that's a loaded expression because there's three ways I would answer that. I absolutely have been saved. I am in the process of being saved, and I will ultimately one day be fully healed and restored and freed up to grow into the fullness of who I am as a unique human being, which is also ultimately being saved. So
you're
all
going to help
three
us.
Meanings.
Well, yeah, and many more, and many more.
Renewing.
That's just
renewing you so
that's
you
just
go
because
we're suffering forever.
That's awesome. That was for those who may be listening on the tape, a part of a pre-hit record conversation where we're talking about
the record today.
No, exactly. About constructs and stuff, and we'll get back to that about when you actually are really committed to your construct. It's amazing what you will actually have to then follow through and say. But think about it. That's just three things that line up, Joyce, with our tenses in English language. Mm. Do you know there's certain languages that have like 22 words, like some Inuit language for snow? We just got snow. Well, every one of their words for snow is actually a kind of snow or a packness of, right? That's just the reality of human speech. So that's why you got to be really careful and thoughtful when you just can't read. Well, the Bible just says, well, it says, you know, we're taking words that were written, at least we think the Old Testament was written when at the very earliest. I'll just jump to the bottom line. It would seem that most of the Old Testament was written while Israel was in exile, going back and Spirit giving some recollection, but they're reinterpreting their story from creation right through to, you know, Abraham and right into this. And so they're going to be how many years removed from us? That's 3,000 years removed from us right now. Mm-hmm. A completely different culture. A completely different, they were immersed in Egyptian Ra'a sun god mythology. So if you look at the creation story, you actually realize it's set up to beautifully counterpoint the Egyptian creation story. And every way along the line, it makes perfect sense to even present the things in the order they're presented in Genesis 1 and 2. And the 7 days contrast seven this. But the last thing that gets put into an Egyptian temple, the last thing you put in to the most sacred place in the Egyptian temple is what? An image of the god. What's the last thing that happens in creation, the last thing that is created? Who does God put in? He puts the image in the temple. Like, it's when you get that as your framework, wow, no wonder Genesis is written the way it is. It's not a textbook on how the world was created. It's a strong affirmation of who is created and the intention behind it. So when you interpret it, do you see how you have to have a little more mature and thoughtful and open frame? This is the nature of all of this. So the good news that we were talking about earlier, Chris, before we started recording, you know, if I'm declaring the beautiful gospel means the good news, euangelion, it was what would happen when a new king had come and had conquered and was now ruling in a distant land, but he had regency, he had dominion over those, you know, lands in faraway places. They wouldn't have a clue. And they would send a runner, somebody out, to announce the euangelion, the good news that there was a new king at hand. That's what the early church was doing. There was a new king who was ruling not with a sword, not with, you know, Pharaoh, with Nero's power, nor with Pharaoh's threats and fears as it did millennia earlier. There was a new king who was ruling with love, who had defeated evil by taking it into himself. And so we're announcing the truth, the good news of what people don't know. And we're simply saying, this is the truth of your being, right? So you see now why some of us years later, like millennia later, have said, that's what it means. That's what this is. We're discovering the truth of God's being and what it means for us. And that is what we announce and proclaim to people. And so But as you do that, those words have associations. Sometimes you can wash them off and repurpose them. Sometimes you just got to let them go. Mm-hmm. That's why words like Christian are getting so sullied that just use their, I'm a Christ follower, or I'm of the way of love of the Jesus kind, or something. You like find some creative way to distinguish. Well, what's that? Well, it's just not associated with, you know, residential school abuse or with Catholic, you know, classic Catholicism or with fundamentalist, you know, eternal conscious torment notions. Yeah, I don't believe in that God either, kind of thing. So all of this long journey of the beautiful gospel in this series that we're looking at called Beloved, Broken, and Beautiful is a journey about the constructs. And maybe we should just jump there because it's, I introduced this earlier for, again, folks who may be listening, but it's the Brad Jerzak quote. It's two panels here on the slide deck. Just jumped ahead a little bit, and here we go. It's about these notions that he has suggested, again, with some pretty big language. And Celine, do you see the underneath my picture there? Okay, so if I get stuck, I'll just call on you to fill in the gaps. Sure. But the way it presents on my screen, I don't get to see the full thing. So this is what we underscored earlier. All theologies are constructs. In other words, just ways of trying to make sense of the world and explaining them and expressing them. They're all constructs developed by people. All people, including myself, Brad's saying. So everything I've been talking about here for 7 years is a distillation of my construct. And all of us actually carry our own unique singular, it may have some similarities to other people's, but it's quite a unique way, because if you've had that experience as a Kenyan-born person, Zabdi, right? And you read the soapbox that said gay soap, right?
Lady gay.
Lady gay. Yeah. Didn't phase you at all. Didn't mean anything to you, right?
It's
a bar of soap. Where's your wife? Caucasian born. Comes over. Knows she's got a few gay friends back here, and or it would be a fun joke. She just can't resist that. That means something different to her. Because her construct is different than Zabdi's. And we are all this beautiful amalgam, composite of our experiences, our inherited familial stories, our cultural ethnicity, our religious socialization, our school experience. Like, just think of every guy in that fire hall, Jimmy, has shaped you a little bit, for better or for worse, right? Yeah. Every person, every neighbor, every coworker, everybody has this influence on how you see, how you interpret what you do. And Brad's just saying that. And so just fully put it on the table. Always remember, all theologies or ways of describing who God is and what it's all about is a construct. It is not the true and full representation of that reality as it is. It's simply our best attempt. They are inferred reflections and personal projections. What's the last thing? Of our individual?
Individual
and communal perceptions and experiences. I think I just said that, right? So it's community that often reinforces it, because your tribe goes a long way to telling you what's good or what's approved and what's not. You know, you think about gangs and why do gangs do what they do? Because once they've got sort of a way of being and a sense of why they should be together, they will do what they do. A gang's just a tribe. It's just a microcosm of any social community, whether it's a family system.
They'll have rules. They'll have love.
Initiation.
They'll have everything. Mm-hmm. Like everything that any of the little around the world.
100%.
Mini government. Yeah.
And so all of that, again, is part of what is flowing in. It's this constant, it's like in the water we've been breathing and swimming in, right? But we don't realize it. And whatever's in that, if it's nutrients, great. If it's toxins, whatever. We assimilate those. Those become part of who we are, how we think, how we see things. So we don't see things as they are. What's the quote? Ready for it, Marilyn? We see things as we are.
So theologies that are constructed can hurt people, but they can also help people.
For sure. And I love where Brad goes with this, because I think he's trying to encourage us, if your theological frame and construct is kind of characterized this way, not the content of it, but the personality, the intangible quality of it. It's very tangible, but he says that it's part of being human, this thing of creating a construct. Each of us composes and sings our song of and to the divine. So I'm singing about God and how I live, what I say, my attitudes, and I'm also, if I'm doing it well, singing to God. It's my song to God. My life make my life an offering, right? Celine quoted a verse earlier from, did you hear it in her prayer? Here I am to worship, here I am to bow down, mm-hmm. here I am to say that you're my God. You're altogether lovely, altogether worthy, altogether mm-hmm. wonderful to me. That's a song sung from, that's Light of This World, right? Here I am to worship is the name of the song, right? So that's a wonderful distillation. That's the song of and to the divine. And Brad, again, is using general language here to try to be more inclusive to people who aren't necessarily of Christian faith. That's why you'll hear me, and you'll see some of my quotes and Instagram stuff, I'll use the word divine love if I kind of want to maybe have a little wider appeal. But I'm not really trying to... I've got a whole new Instagram account I'm going to get queued up with some, quote, less faith explicit language, or less Christian explicit language, more faith slash spiritual slash soul language. Brad continues on with this quote. If you don't have my slide deck, by the way, if you're listening online or somewhere, you'll never follow this. So just look at the slides. Brad says, that's fine, this thing about each of us singing our own song of and to the divine. Sometimes those songs are achingly beautiful, I would say slash good slash right on. Other times they are cruel and ugly, perhaps coming out of our own sense of pain, which is not a bad song, but maybe it's actually a song that's really distorted in what it affirms and what it's, you know, what it so-called says is true and real, because that's what we've experienced. And that's okay. It's an honest song. It just may not be quite as life-giving to others. The sad reality, and this is where he's going with it, is that so many divinize their theology or ideology. That means they sort of declare that this must be the definitive way. This is the right and only way to say something, to see something. Mm. And then they take that and they try to impose it on everybody. And particularly, they'll make it into a hammer that they literally will beat others into submission or
tyranny.
Or it's an absolute tyranny. That's what's happening, particularly in the U.S. right now, with this rise of what we call Christian nationalism. It's the assumption that there's one particular party, there's one particular social policy, there's one particular thing that is inherently Christian and God-honoring. And so, I'm not saying Mr. Trump doesn't have some political policies that people are, you know, free to believe, but people literally believe Trump is God's man, and we're talking tens of millions of evangelical Christians who used to love Billy Graham, who would be rolling over in his grave if anybody. Graham prayed with Nixon, but he was outraged when Nixon's crimes came to light. Yeah. He was outraged when he heard how he talked about people. He couldn't have distanced himself more from the spirit of this dear broken person called Nixon, who was just a deep in. That's not what they're doing with Trump, with his way that he treats women, with the way. So the difference is, it's stunning. If you see it, we're talking the biggest evangelical, big name people that 20 years ago, there's no way you would have assumed that. Franklin Graham, Billy's son, who leads Samaritan's Purse, is one of these people. Whoa. Oh yeah, if you don't know this, this is why ideologies are so, I'm not saying he agrees with everything, but they are willing to suspend any other consideration for two issues. They're still hammer on same-sex marriage and abortion. And they don't care what will happen to the rest of society. They'll even subvert democracy and insist that elections have been stolen. If God's man must be in there, therefore, it can't be wrong to oppose an election. Do you see how absolutely blind you can become?
Yeah. Yes.
You become Saul of Tarsus. So sure you're doing the work of God that you're putting people to death in God's name. Or you're a modern-day jihadist who's so convinced that you're going to be immediately transported into the presence of Allah with X number of virgins, that you, if you follow through on this act, so Christians can fall into it, people of all faiths can fall into it. This is what happens. And this is what we tend to do it. And I love how Brad says, and we fashion it into a bludgeon of exclusion. Everyone else must be 100% wrong. We are the right and only way. And this is what is devastating. But here's I love where he goes with it. The mystical, he says, though, and by that he just means the recognition of that mystery is part of reality. We can't know everything. Some things are a mystery. There's a great line. Sorry, had a movie quote. Any of you see Shakespeare in Love, the funny little film with the... Do you remember that one from years ago?
I don't remember much about it,
Colin,
but I did see it.
Gwyneth Paltrow's in it, and... No, it's not. It's Colin Firth is in it. That's right. He plays the husband. Yeah, he's the husband who's Gwyneth Paltrow. She's been betrothed to him, but the younger and character Ralph Fiennes is the.
Oh, Ralph. Yeah.
Is it Ralph Fiennes? Yeah.
Yeah, and Judy Dench.
Whoever it was, I knew he had an older brother who was more.
Yeah. Famous. Yeah. There you go. So the funny movie is there's the character played by Jeffrey Rush who's the person who's trying to organize and produce the show, and he's always asked, "Well, how's it going to work out?" I don't know. It's a mystery. He would just throw that light out. But mystery is actually part of the nature of faith. We don't know for sure. We can't say that we know. There are the eternal God, the creator of the universe, becomes a creature. I believe it. It's a mystery how that can be. And this person, this being, as an embryo inside Mary's womb and growing up as a young child, is holding the universe together. That's mystery. There has to be place for mystery. And it's not just a cobble and say, well, since we can't know it, we just say it's mystery. No, but it's like, let's just recognize our creaturely limits and just say it's okay to say that we don't know. So the mystical streams of most faiths will call out that kind of abuse of power, that forcing everyone to see one way and line up behind a certain practice in society or whatever. Call out that misuse of theology as an egoist barrier to the beloved.
I think most people can see those churches now, and that's why all those churches are dead. That's why their numbers are dropping like crazy. Those kind of churches are saying that kind of thing. They're so small now. They're such a minor.
Although I would love to think so, because they are actually growing in popularity. The increasing polarization, I guess. There's very little middle ground. So a guy like Brian Zond. That was my little side. I looked back to the sidebar earlier. When you talk about the word beautiful gospel, and I said I didn't trademark my fully known deeply loved. I actually reached out to Brian Zond, this is 8 years ago now, because I was getting ready to register beautifulgospel.com. And I said, Brian, I just need to be, he says, well, is the gospel beautiful? Yes. Then it's beautiful. No one has a trademark on that story. It was like, yes. Isn't that a mature answer? Brian's church in St. Louis, probably 1,500 to 2,000 people. It's one of the few larger churches I know of that is absolutely standing against this, and yet still a popular, bigger church. But he's turned away from his hyper-Calvinism and his Sinners in the Hands of Angry God, framework from years ago, and has written some wonderful books and is all part of this circle of this growing chorus of friends who are seeing and offering their insights and help to others. So so I agree with you. I think there's a self-destructiveness that will eventually play itself out. In Europe, it's much more evident that way. Those churches have long since historically started to decline. And it's happening here in Canada to some degree, because we're in a post-Christian reality. The states are still in the illusion that there's this Christendom, that there's this, if we just get the right people into political places of power and judges into the Supreme Court, we can get prayer back into the schools and we can see this Christian society imposed. So they're still living under this just bizarre illusion that that's the kingdom of God, and it's a crusade mindset. If we could just impose this on the world. So I don't disagree with you that there are places it's declining, but I think there's sadly equally places that this is all the more popular.
There definitely are more people becoming conservative as things like the child gender thing happen. Right on that alone, as soon as the school starts saying, "Oh no, we're gonna decide what your children are," all of a sudden, a whole bunch of people are in the middle. My children, we're right now. Yeah. You're talking about attacking our children.
Or in the healthiest expressions, you realize that anytime anybody's imposing an ideology on other people, that's forcing them to somehow, not be respected in that thing. Yeah. That's why you can get actually people of Muslim faith standing alongside thoughtful people of Catholic faith alongside some others say, I'm sorry, please leave that to us.
Yeah.
You're free. We don't have any discrimination against people who may be affirming this or that way of understanding their sexuality. But please don't say this is the only way to see it, because that's not true multiculturalism. That's actually an autocratic, fascist kind of society. And that's what there's a rise of some folks who will hold their nose at certain things that happen on the right because they're concerned that they see that on the extreme left. So no doubt that's definitely happening. But you probably know about stories about people like Constantine and others who very much recognized the power that they inherently started to just get to draft right in behind when they ride the coattails of a popular movement. Yeah. It's been long known, going back to before Reagan's era, that if you could actually, you know, massage and say the right things to certain large voting blocks, particularly in the U.S., and it happens here in Canada, but it's a little bit of a different breakdown, you could guarantee yourself election by just saying the right things. So the only thing I can ever come back to is, well, of course we all want to extend grace to one another for time to grow into the way of our being, the truth of our being to become the way of our being. Jesus also said, by your fruits you're going to know them. And the absence of seemingly any sense of contrition, repentance, self-limit, the absolute rampant narcissism and egotism and just vileness of some of what is done in people like that, or in a Putin, or in whatever. I don't care who you profess to follow. Your life is your witness.
Amen.
And that's the more important thing. So yeah. I would suggest that I think that there is a great amount of expediency and convenience in people like the Donald Trumps of this world, or just anybody else. Just plug it in. In Russia, let's take Putin, for example. He is... Of course he's an Russian Orthodox believer, because if he's got the Creole, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, endorsing him, he's got a huge chunk of Russia's support base. Putin couldn't be further from a follower of Jesus than anybody, because the fruit of his life is self-evident. It's, don't be fooled, Jesus says. There are going to be sheep in wolves clothing. You're going to know people. A good tree can't produce bad fruit. It doesn't mean that we all have it perfect and we don't fail. But that's why it isn't just about what we say with our words. You step back and you maybe take some time and you look at the overall sort of sum of anyone's profession. And it would be different if it says, yeah, I really have a hard time with this and this and this. And I haven't got my, you know, bad, all kinds of things that, but I really believe and I'm working hard toward, and you'd see contrition and you'd see humility and you'd see... this thing we call metanoia. So it's interesting that Jesus would say to the religious leader, you brood of vipers. This is Jesus speaking. You brood of vipers. You say this, but you go around doing this. Yeah. And he absolutely would call out that hypocrisy all the time, realizing you can't be worried about a speck in your brother's eye. We got a plank in your own. So it's never an either or, but I think there's a way to come at that is not being unkind to all of us on our journeys, but that doesn't just maybe fall into some kind of a more shallow assessment of somebody's so-called profession of faith. I don't know. That's my response.
Maybe separating his maturity as a human being, which is we're all going through, as you're saying, from his public office and his what he's doing there, what is visibly available for us to see what's happening.
Most people who are of his party who have had the courage to step out have, even the new Speaker of the House in the U.S., do you know this guy, Mike Johnson? You've heard it? You should hear him on record in 2015 talking about Trump, saying he's an absolute idiot. He shouldn't be anywhere near the White House. Our party following him. Yeah. And he's the biggest Trump supporter now because it's convenient. It has nothing to do with the integrity of... And the same thing can happen for Trudeau. I think, you know, all our leaders can be... Harper, pick your leader. It's there are glaring consistencies, and we ought to be able to have, you know, criticism for people. What I don't think I have to worry about is Trudeau's not putting his faith out as a marketed thing to try to sort of swing a block of voters.
Well, a type of faith he puts out.
He does. A type of faith. Hang on, it's an ideology. He's actually true as much more.
I would say he's the most fervent faith preacher of an ideology that I've seen.
Of an ideology. He is absolutely... and
hardcore. Way bigger than your biggest preacher you talk about down south.
And what's probably more evident of people further to the left on our political spectrum here is they're at least more open about their ideological frame. They say they're of this particular... But Polyev's got his own frame. He's got his own frame, right? And we're not here to settle the politics of this. We're simply to say that, are you honest with your frame? And are you self-aware with what's in your lens? Yeah. That's the conversation we're trying to have.
Well, that's the problem with voting, period. You have to hold your nose while you do your check. You have to.
Exactly.
But it is that too, but you don't know that said, We're talking about lesser of two evils, and I wish we had multiple good choices in Canada, multiple viable options in Canada. Instead, we're going to increasingly pull. But if you get the principle, that's what we're talking about, and that's I'm trying to circle it back over, because I meant to mention earlier. And so it's easy to look south of the border and see this rise of Christian nationalism. We have it right here in Canada too. There are not just the party that's so-called the Christian Heritage Party, which fine, at least you've got it on the table, but it's. What's regrettable, in my opinion, again, this is just my opinion, you don't have to agree with me at all, is that there is an equal movement here in Canada that's trying to do what is much more widespread accepted in the States, and that is to impose a Christian agenda. You'll hear it. We got to bring righteousness back to Canada. It's there in our parliament. It was founded on a Christian principles, and we actually are trying to impose a Christendom. We're doing the very thing that the Brad Jerzak quote is talking about. We haven't gotten to page two yet. It's sincere. I think it's profoundly wrongheaded, and it is not about the way of love. It's just another veiled form of a crusade that's trying to impose the kingdom of God and our values. I would rather we win people to our way of seeing and being than ever to impose something on them. And as much as we may be concerned about the life of the unborn or other things that are particular to what is typically called a conservative evangelical position, I think that in Canada we just need to be cognizant of that we have that same virus that infects us that says we will do whatever we can to get power, and once we've gotten that power, we're going to do good with it, but absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it's just the early church for the first 300 and plus years never even thought of going that route to change the world. So I would suggest political means, while we shouldn't be totally disengaged from it, is not our hope. I would like to vote for someone because they have thoughtful policies that are good for everybody and aren't just reduced down to a particular couple of issues. That's all.
This was a group that's been following polling in the US since like the 90s, and they could see a time in the vote. It's not who you voted for, it's why you voted. And I think it was around 2014, people switched to voting for not policies that they like, but voting against people they don't like. Like they've been doing it for a year, and they actually see the switch where it literally switched from voting. Yeah.
But I hope you can see in this unintended discourses on sort of the political side of it, but we're political people. We are, policy just means public, right? It means the public space. So this phenomena that Brad's been talking about, and I do want to get to part two of the quote, because that's where it's going.
It's hard to go theology and ideology without going.
This is not a bad thing. I'm just saying we can get into the more the granular stuff of the political implications, rather than saying, let's keep stepping back to the bigger level of principle and saying this phenomena of imposing from atop versus sort of wooing and winning from below, from the way of love, is what's going on. In particular, as Brad's talking about, this was all under a post in the Instagram called Song of the Beloved. Okay, so that's where, and remember doing this series on Beloved, Broken, and Beautiful. It's not just the tie-in. I don't look for words to tie-in, but here's where Brad goes with this. Okay, so everything on the long on the front. Let's see how the second page lands. The first line is going to do it for me to start. Salvation is not found in my assent or agreement to any sort of statement of beliefs. It's not like five things on your belief checklist, boom. Right? Theological assertion, that's what I'm saying. I believe Jesus is God in the flesh, and I think that's important for knowing and enjoying your salvation. But even saying that, I believe Jesus is God come in the flesh, doesn't save me. But, Celine, what's the word? Assertion, yes, but...
any theological assertion, but in the infinite love.
But in the infinite love of whatever, so you remember Brad's trying to leave this open for people of other faiths, whatever or whomever the divine beloved is and...
Isn't.
It's about the nature of the object of our faith, not about my ability to get it right, or, as Baxter says, did you believe in me, or how much faith did you have? Did you have enough to get saved? And, it's this notion. In my song of the beloved, in my song, Brad says, this is Brad's now personal testimony, and you, again, this is just Brad saying it. I think it's, he's singing his song for me too. Hey, I'll join you in the song, Brad. In my song of the beloved, Jesus showed us this way, this truth, this life. But it's not my song that saves me, but the one to whom I sing imperfectly. That's the line of the, that's singing the line of it. That's what we have to hold on to. And if that's the case, it doesn't mean that I don't care about, quote, the truth and about these conversations that we would have about, you know, what's befitting of the nature of this God who reveals himself in the face of Jesus as perfect love. And yes, too, this is my construct, what Brad just said. I do not know it in the way I know theological propositions. I know it in the way I trust that my mother loves me and would and has laid her life down for me. And I don't know the limits of such love because they are by nature higher, wider, longer, and deeper than my rational and relational capacities. But in my song, here we are, Shirley. We're finally getting there. I've come to believe God is love. Full stop. This is the beautiful gospel. This is at the core of what it means to hold together the truth of our belovedness, the brokenness of our shared human experience, and the fact that there is a beauty that Trinity is working in and through it, as tragically self-destructive as we show ourselves to be often, and as collectively we can be as a society and as nations in warfare against each other. I've got a friend who's a high-ranking civil servant in the provincial civil service, just one step below an elected position. And she says, I have constant factions now in my workplace who sympathize with Israel, sympathize with Hamas and Palestinian. They don't distinguish, sadly, between, in my mind, between Hamas and Palestinian causes. And she says, I can never do enough for her. Now, thankfully, she's got the resolve of spirit, but these are the kind of people that I'm trying to coach and support in the place of holding on to that. She's an extraordinary person of faith herself and has a grasp of this beautiful gospel. And how do you help those people along a path of not being ideologically so captured by one side of the binary, mm-hmm. and say, could you nurture and cultivate an ability to hear the other, to feel their pain? You can still not agree with what they do, but you're able to then maybe find a way to journey toward this truth that God is love. Yeah. It's a lot, and we are going to come back to this. But I will take just a few more moments here, a couple minutes here, Celine, if I may, because it's
not my call.
I know. I'm teasing.
Just go away. It's not my call.
Okay? It's the group's call. You should have a timer. You should have a voting thing. Land at any time now.
It's going to become a political issue. Okay.
You got two things to land it. So here's our friend George MacDonald. I like this picture of him better than the one that's going to come up in a minute. But he says, there's the scripture, right, from Psalm 100 in the Message. God is sheer beauty, all generous in love, loyal always and ever. Full stop. Hang on, that's the Old Testament. Yeah, okay, they've seen through a glass darkly, but they did somehow, they were dialing into that somehow deep down. New Testament does a pretty good job. Jesus does a pretty good job of unveiling that as the heart of the Father. But here's what MacDonald says in low theologies. That's his critical term. That's his put down, right? Yeah. His slam. And in low theologies, and he was surrounded. He was a tiny little voice in the wilderness of the angry, vengeful, eternal conscious torment. The God who, before anything was created, decided that there was a tiny group of people who would be his elect, and everyone else was, ready for this, reprobate and deserving of and going to suffer in hell. They were the unelect. And that's the way Calvinists tried to make sense of the system. They had a system, and they had to figure out how could this God do this. And he was all powerful, and he had foreknowledge, and he had this. And so he is this, but he is this. And they are caught in, I would say, a schizophrenic way of seeing, because they have this God who could just be absolutely capricious, but also could be loving. And it's like, ooh, which God are you the elect or not elect? And so this is who MacDonald is talking about when he says, in low theologies, hell is invariably, and you're going to have to help me again with my bottom line here, Celine, the deepest truth, and the love of God
is not so deep as hell.
So just, again, the way that they express themselves in the mid-1800s, can you get the sense of that? Mm-hmm. Hell is invariably the deepest truth, And the love of God is not so deep as hell. In other words, there's something deeper than the love of God, the absolute unconditional love. And it's this thing that somehow has to be held in place instead of saying, well, let's then reimagine whatever we think hell might be. And so MacDonald says this, the very fire of hell is the fire of love. Again, we've talked about this before, but it's always fun to come back to some of these things a few months later and see, well, are we sort of able to apprehend this? Mm-hmm. But it's a love that will burn the evil out of you. It's the laser of the skillful cancer surgeon who's going inside, you know, right where the brain and all the tumor has worked its way around and has to have just such precise skill. But it's burning away the cancer because of love for the patient's thriving and well-being. There's no way you leave that cancer mm-hmm. to just go unchecked. But the patient has to be willing to go on the table and has to be a willing participant in that process. You can't drag people in, tie them down to the table. It won't do anything. Well, unless the analogy breaks down.
Unless it's a vaccination.
Oh, Chris Kidder.
And then you have to have it. No choice.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Zero
choice. I love it. I think we know where we're
conservatives wrong.
We're comfortable with people who are free to make their own choices. Let's just say that. So I asked this question a couple of years ago. What are the essential qualities of God's love? So how far will Trinity go to reach us in our blindness and deafness? How about that song? It's the bridge from the song Reckless Love. Mm-hmm. There's no shadow you won't light up, mountain you won't climb up, coming after me. There's no wall you won't kick down, lie you won't tear down, coming after me. So do you see where the fury of love, the wrath of God, is coming against every lie, every shadow, every mountain, every wall? It's not coming against you. It's coming in that against you, which is reposing love, and or that which in the system, or that which, that's why Jesus is turning over tables. He's not turning them over because he's this angry guy who's got to get his anger off. Mm-hmm. He's actually coming against that which is obscuring the Father's face, which is blinding the wounded and weary and those who just so desperately need to know they're loved. Mm-hmm. That's what it means. How long does God's love last? Your love never fails, never gives up. Never runs out on me. Any of you guys know that little worship ditty? Mm-hmm. Is it conditional / contractual or covenantal in nature, and why? Do you know the difference between those two words? Contractual?
Mm-hmm. Play your part.
What's in a contract? Terms and conditions.
Yeah, you have to do these things, and if you fail to do them, then the contract's null and void.
Yep.
Covenantal seems more, I don't know if relational is quite the right word.
It's
I'm
a beautiful
looking
word.
For,
it's a beautiful
but,
word for it, yeah.
Covenantal, I think's more accepting of.
Are they both
fluctuations?
Covenantal. Are they both conditional?
So I would say no, they're not. So that's why I put conditional and contractual on that side. So what was Abraham doing when God made his covenant with him way back in
sleeping.
Middle parts?
Sleeping.
Do you realize he was sleeping? He was asleep? That's what Abraham brought to the table.
Well, sleep.
He was sleeping.
Nothing.
Do you realize how many times when Israel finds itself in its complete, it's just totally messed the bed, and it's either in exile or where, you know, there's all kinds of times in the Old Testament. And what's the promise of God about the thing that's ultimately coming? Who's the actor? Who's the one who takes responsibility? Nevertheless, I will. I will. I will. Covenantal love is one which does not excuse. It takes responsibility for one's own behavior, regardless of the behavior of the other. And the nature of God's covenant with humanity is he's never been waiting for you and I and the human race to get it right. There is consequence for our choices. Mm-hmm. You know, on the day you eat of it, you are going to die. Yeah, your innocence is lost. You're downloaded with the blindness and toxic, you know, fear of, and shame of the enemy. And so we've lived that as a human race. But it's God's love didn't change. His covenant with humanity, his covenant as a good parent never changed. God has always been with relating to us in covenant. But most of us, if not almost all of us in the West, and that includes Catholic and Protestant, have actually had a far more contractual understanding of this relationship with God. If you do this, then I will do that. You, if you get it right, and we don't say it, you know, well, but if you pray this prayer. Well, think about that. It's,
this is what we'll
have. It can be in a beautiful expression, but is it even the vow on your wedding day that your vow is a commitment? It's an expression of your love, but your vow can't possibly be, it doesn't just somehow magically make the relationship. It might give expression to a particular important moment of shared agreement around your intention, but you have to grow into that. You grow up into it. It can never be about a contract. Mm-hmm. And so what ultimate goal and purpose does divine love then have in view? Just kind of blowing through it. MacDonald suggests this. God, primarily God, is not bound to punish sin. He is bound to destroy sin. The only vengeance worth having on sin is to make the sinner himself or herself its executioner. Again, this guy was working in a time, again, his way of expressing, but just let this one sit. You get that one, Sil? Mm-hmm. Because why is that the best way to deal with sin? Because it actually invites and empowers you to make a choice that will genuinely participate in its outworking. If it's done to you, if it's done against your will, it'll never have a healing capacity to it. But if I say, it's like getting in shape, Zabby, right? It's like, you know, and starting to eat healthier. It's like, I got to be the one to actually choose this and agree with it. Mm. Otherwise, it's not going to magically just happen.
It's sacrifice is what it has to be.
It's sacrifice. It's a commitment. It's right. So and God doesn't need, God's not got something in his character. Oh, until I punish the sin, I can't relate to you. He's interested in curing. He wants to heal. He wants health and wellness. By that, I mean spiritual, body, soul, mind, health, and wellness.
I'm going to pick Ozempic.
Oh, that's hilarious. He doesn't just... Oh, that's great. If you know what Ozempic is, it's one of the new sort of... It's primarily for people who are diabetic or pre-diabetic because it's helping them to drop some weight. It's helping to deal with some insulin levels. But it also has been found to help you lose weight. So people are using it for reasons that it wasn't originally designed for, as a weight loss drug, right? Mm-hmm. Because, oh, I can just still be what I don't have to adjust anything, but I can lose some pounds. Wow. That's a great reference, Chris.
That's the medical system.
Here's MacDonald's famous quote. You've seen this numerous times. Because God's love loves under purity, not moral purity and, oh, have you kept yourself? But no, it always has in view the absolute loveliness of that which it beholds. God looks at you, he loves you, and he wants you to thrive. He wants you to enjoy life. It's me looking at Francis and saying, Francis, all these little rants and all your little brokenness. I accept you. I love you. But please, you know, the sooner you get over this and the sooner you learn to just, you're going to enjoy life a lot more. You're going to play with, you're going to have more fun with your toys, right? That's what God is doing. That's the nature of his love. And therefore, all that is not beautiful in the beloved, all that becomes between and is not of love's kind must be destroyed in this life. And I believe this goes on in the age to come. It's not purgatory paying for your sins, but it is a love, being in the presence of perfect love, a willing participation in this ongoing refining, healing love of Father, Son, and Spirit. And so I won't carry on in how then you read John 15, but you read John 15 in that light, you'll never see the cutting off of the branches as somehow excluding us or a sinner. Let's just pause there. We'll stop there. A few last comments, thoughts, and we've probably had way too much content flowing this morning, but hopefully it's landed or been meaningful. Anything, any thoughts on anything that was shared earlier? Any of the quotes, any of the notions of love? I'm going to put that one back up the screen because I kind of like those questions.
Well, Michael, the poem that I sent you this
morning. Oh, I got it. I queued it up.
Don't bring it up. It's okay.
No, I do. I got it.
But it's called Reality Check.
I got it right here.
It's a very cynical way of looking at the world, but you don't have to bring it up.
I queued it up. Well, looking for it.
People are probably...
No. We got good. I want to make it look... Let me blow it up here on two different slides. Hang on.
It's lost within the moment now, but it's just...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not at all. No, it doesn't matter.
I shouldn't have lost it in the moment. Let me get it up here.
Because we went on to make this lovely ending, because that's much better.
No, I want the reality check. Okay, here's the big, here's the first half of big print, and here's the second half big print.
It's a tongue-in-cheek.
I'll put it back on screen for the rest of you. Hang on a second, all you folks online. You're so patient here to, oh, I know how I can do this better. You got to do this to Keynote, then you do that, and then I can go, boom, to make it nice and big, and so you can see it. There we go. So part one, part two. Here we go. We're going to start sharing screen again so you can all see it.
I can do this.
Oh, it's not that hard. It looks like rock. Oh, it's really hard. It's really hard. You got to go to school a long time. You should pay me so much more money because it's so hard. Okay, hang on. Just a screen share in case anyone's still with us online, because Sonia says, I got to see the reality check because she's feeling reality check right now. Here we go. Okay, Celine, come on, please. Would you read it for us?
No, I just don't want to impose on you folks.
Not imposing.
The author read it.
Please, author read it.
Having grown up with a hell kind of bound in, so look at me as I look at you. Two different perspectives, two points of view. With what you see and what I see begins the mystery of having to be conceived and born and brought into being without our knowing, without our agreeing. To come and take our expected place, engaging with the human race.
So good. This is going out in the slide deck, by the way, just so you know. Hang on. Got to go down one. Whoops. It's not on actual presentation mode, so I'd have to go here to change it. There it is. Okay, go ahead. No. Go.
So I thought this just fit with this morning. That's why I thought of it.
Keep going.
What I've learned or being taught to think, each primal, powerful, persuasive link, they're all just really an approximate guess of what a life is supposed to experience.
Oh, come on. There it is. You're Brad Jerzak. Amen.
So here I am in time and space, filed in a global database, working out an action plan based on my estimated lifespan.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. You know there's a whole movement called nihilism in the philosophical movement, right?
That's
right?
About it, yeah.
No. But this is exactly, like, this is what happens, and this is honest.
Yeah.
This is what we should in the seasons of faith, right? McLaren's thing. Yeah. Sometimes in the complexity and especially in the perplexity. Mm-hmm. But if we say, well, you shouldn't feel that way, that's the psalmist saying, what up, God? Like, come on. I thought the righteous were supposed to prosper. I thought this way of love was supposed to work out and pay off. It doesn't look like it's paying off, or it's real slow. Could you get with the program, right? And this is so understandable. And we need to be honest. This is okay. And nice, thank you, Celine, for giving expressing that. So,
well, I didn't miss that. Jeez.
Exactly. Thanks, Zabby. So, thank you, everybody, for your kind attention. I went on a little bit more.